Welcome to Let's Get Our Ship Together, a queer women of color debrief on the latest in queer lady and POC representation in television and film. I'm Amira.
And I'm Aphrodite.
And in this episode, we are going to be talking about the latest episodes of Charmed and Black Lightning. So that's Charmed episode 13 and Black Lightning episode 14.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to mostly just focus on our ships of interest here. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we got, I have to tell you, so now that we've switched over, for me at least, I'm not watching the full Black Lightning episodes. I'm just watching the Thunder Grace compilation clips.
Right.
Thank you, YouTube. Thank you, lesbians of the interwebs, for doing that work for me. I was watching that clip. It was a 3-minute and 44-second clip on YouTube. Oh my God. And I was watching it while I had a friend visiting me. And so she was in the bed next to me. And we're both getting ready for bedtime. And I'm like, I'm just going to watch this clip before I go to bed. And I'm just like screaming during this 3 minutes and 44 seconds worth of like really intense content about Thunder, mm-hmm. about Grace Troy and Thunder Grace. And I'm just like, what? And I was literally, I was just screaming, what the fuck? The whole time. that was my reaction to all the stuff that was happening.
Wow. Yeah, no, it was really intense. I was a little bit bummed that in real life, Chantal Thuy didn't get a lot of screen time.
Yeah,
what, maybe exactly, like a second or two.
Exactly. Are they just not interested in paying her? Is that what this is about? I can't believe they have an actress as attractive and good-looking as Chantal Thuy, and they're not giving her the screen time that she deserves and that we deserve,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
as viewers.
I know. Yeah. I'm like, is she busy with other projects? Because I really can't see a good, legitimate reason for them not to be giving her more screen time, since her storyline is getting plenty of screen time. But
oh, yeah.
Anyway, speaking of her storyline, apparently Grace is like a full-on shapeshifter, mm-hmm. and can apparently change forms somewhat at will. It seems like it's like a little bit out of her control at sometimes, but yeah, she like took the form of like this like old man.
Yeah.
When Anissa came over looking for her. And I was really worried that the bad smell in the apartment was going to be a dead body. And I thought it was going to be, yeah. I thought it was going to be that guy's dead body.
Oh, fuck.
You know what
That's
I mean?
That's so terrifying. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Did not go there.
I know. I think I've just been watching like too many scary movies. Yeah. I guess I was like almost relieved to see that it was like a dead horse or, you know, whatever it was. So, but yeah, Anissa goes back as Thunder. And so do you think that Grace recognized her when she came back the second time? Because she must have known her voice, right?
I don't know. It was very curious to me. So Anissa goes up to this door and she's like, hey, I'm looking for Grace. I just want to know that she's okay. And then we hear growling noises,
mm-hmm.
from behind the door. And then this old Asian dude opens the door and he says, trouble will find you if you do not leave this place. So in that moment, Grace knows that it's Anissa and definitely does not want to hurt Anissa.
Right.
And then like the guy shuts the door and then you realize it's Grace and her eyes glitch. And then she like transmogrifies back into her real self.
Mm-hmm.
And like during the scene, I was like, okay, well, how much control does she have over this ability? Because it seemed like in previous episodes, she wasn't able to control herself,
right.
from shifting. But in this instance, she clearly could shift into the figure of this older man and then shift back into her real self.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yeah, and they did some things with sound effects, not just with the growling noises, but when she had the door kind of open, you were kind of wondering, is there something else back there?
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And we weren't sure what that might have been.
And then, you know, and then Anissa said something smelled awful. So, of course, you know, my mind immediately went to some sort of dead body.
Jesus, God. I do have to say, like, you know how I've, like, sort of decided I it's too violent for me to watch Black Lightning in full? Mm-hmm. That scene with the carcass in the room was a lot for me.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
Yeah,
it was so much.
Imagine.
So Anissa comes back to the apartment later as Thunder. And I'm like, if you don't want – Anissa, if you don't want people to know that you are Thunder, are you sure you want to be creeping up on the same-ass place, like asking about the same-ass person
in
two different identities?
And then, and her voice isn't disguised, because at least like her dad has this like voice changer thing when he talks as Black Lightning. So that, you know, I mean, I still think it's like kind of the whole like superhero wears like a small eye mask thing and then nobody recognizes them has always been like ridiculous to me.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, let's just like entertain that fantasy for a moment. So apparently they can't recognize them visually when they wear that eye cover. It's like barely even sunglasses, really. And then they don't recognize Jefferson by voice because he has the voice changer. So why doesn't Anissa have a voice changer?
She doesn't have a voice changer at all. But it's also curious because, like, two different people who are black women about the same height with the same voice are, like, knocking on the door of this, like, isolated, like, who knows where they are, apartment, asking about Grace Choi, the same person. That's highly suspect.
And she said her own full name the first time. She said, "Hi, I'm Anissa Pierce."
I know. You couldn't have said.
Because I remember thinking, like, you could just say I'm Anissa or just not say your name at all or a made-up name or anything else.
I'm like, Anissa's just careless.
She really is.
She's so careless as a superhero. Like, left and right, just, like, giving away all the clues about her identity.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Anissa comes back to the apartment as Thunder this time. And then she gets into the apartment and there's still that growling sound. And then as soon as she's inside, there's that awful smell and you can hear flies buzzing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the god-awful sight that I wish I could unsee, there was a dead deer carcass with its innards hanging out.
It was a deer. Okay. Yeah. I couldn't tell if it was like a horse. I feel like it was so dark. It was like hard to see. And they were focusing on the guts and not the head.
I know. I'm just like, oh my God. So like, it's like, why the hell is there a dead deer carcass in there? And does this have to do with Grace Choi's powers? From the growling sound, it sounded like she was some kind of like large cat, like a panther.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the deer was the animal that she was eating as a panther. But then like Anissa's in there, she sees the carcass, and then all of a sudden a voice coming from out of the dark, "You should not have come here. Leave before it's too late." and then this is the scene where we see like Grace and Anissa actually fight and keep up with each other. Grace can put up a good fight as this old Asian dude.
And it seemed like Anissa, I mean, it took her a while to do the whole like the deep breath controlling her density thing. Cause she was like actually getting beat up for a little bit. And then she was like, all right, I gotta actually go full power. Cause I think at first she was holding back. Like she didn't want to
hurt this guy,
whoever she thought this person was. So I have a couple of theories. I feel like because now that Grace is on the run, she doesn't have that medication, right?
Oh.
And I'm wondering if she has – so I think that the medication helped her suppress the power and that maybe it's similar to like Jefferson's power or even Jennifer's power where like it sort of builds up.
Oh.
And so like she can control it in that like she can shift into what she wants to, but like – she can't like not shift for a long time or something like that.
Oh,
you know?
Interesting.
So maybe that's why she had trouble controlling herself when she was like hanging out with Anissa for a long periods of time, because she'd start getting like, you know, the shifties.
Yeah. Yeah. The shifties. Is that what we're going to call it?
Yeah. And then she'd like, you know, go run and take the meds, which would supposedly calm it down. So I don't know. And then, so it looked like we saw Grace's maybe like true form or something. And that, you know, I don't know if like, she like hunts as like some sort of wildcat. I mean, it's like, again, it was kind of dark in the scene, but I remember seeing like a tail of some sort.
Yes, I saw a tail. I paused the video to replay it, and it's definitely a black tail moving. And there are several times where Anissa's looking around and can't find her.
So Kristen was saying that she thought it was some sort of like smoke thing. Like it didn't quite have like a physical form, but I don't know. We were like debating about what we saw. It was, I think, intentionally very fast so that we would be like, what was that? You know?
Yeah. I think what they're trying to communicate and part of the reason why it took Anissa so long to like get into her thunder mode with the breathing is because we're supposed to see that Grace is faster than Thunder. Like she just moves a lot faster as a cat and can like hide a lot better. Also a cat thing, right?
Right.
So like all those damn growling sounds were saying to me that, okay, Grace Choi is some kind of like wildcat and she just ate a deer. and that's what that was about. But also, how'd you get the deer in there? How'd you get the deer in the apartment, right? Like, how do you kill a deer and then drag it in your human or cat form into this apartment? Like, so many questions. Like, remember how, like, our previous episode title was, like, so many questions?
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, there's even more. Like,
I know.
why is this a power that she's trying to hide? Because if I could shapeshift, I'd be using that all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you know, we know she's had a troubled past, and I think maybe this made her feel even more like an outsider, so maybe that's why she, like, you know, tried to suppress it. But, you know, so one thing that I'm a little bit worried about with where the storyline is going, shapeshifting is a really cool power, but like we saw in this episode, it means less screen time for the actor.
Yeah, so agreed.
I know that she's, you know, inevitably going to be joining up with Anissa, and possibly, you know, the whole Outsiders team will form up, but it means that when Grace is, like, on a case using her power, she's not actually, like, Chantal Tui is not actually going to be in the scene, which is a little bit unfortunate. Unless we get more, you know, Anissa, Grace, like, couple time, in which case I'm hoping she stays in Grace
in form. Yeah, because that'd be pretty weird.
Takes role-playing to a whole nother level.
Yeah, and I think, like, you and I are often just concerned about, like, actresses of color getting screen time, and obviously, like, this is a show with, like, a black cast, and we get plenty of Anissa, but it is kind of a shame that, like, Grace's power doesn't let us see her more. And again, she's so attractive. I'm so confused about why they would do this to her.
Yeah,
why would they withhold her attractiveness from us lesbian audiences?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, it's not necessarily the creators of this show, like, of Black Lightning, it's not necessarily their fault if she just was already given this power from before. You know, they're just, like, following. So let's see. Okay.
Superhero, she has better than human abilities, meta-human levels of strength, heightened durability, endurance, as well as regeneration and increased healing. So this says to me it's a departure from the comics.
Interesting. Okay.
Oh, okay. Hold on. The spots, though. So, like, maybe she's, like, a black leopard because her skin, like, was kind of spotty, remember?
I thought it was just, like, a tattoo. Like, it looked like a sleeve. Like, a sleeve
tattoo. It did seem like that, but, like, it was kind of spotty, remember? Hmm. Like, not just on her arm, but on her neck, too. Maybe we maybe we need to rewatch that, but I'm not clear. I'm not convinced entirely that they have the same powers for her in The Outsiders as they do on the TV show. But maybe we have to do some more homework to find out. I don't know. If anybody is listening who happens to read The Outsiders comics and can tell us more, like, please share. I want to know all the things. I'm probably too lazy to go and read the comics right now. especially if I'm going to be digging for just the one storyline and The Outsiders is about an entire cast of superheroes.
Oh, okay. So apparently she does have tattoos styled along Pacific First Nations lines on both of her arms and a circular sun design around her navel. So maybe that's what we're seeing in, like, the rippling is those tattoos. They also took the surviving victim of a prostitution ring storyline from the original comic.
Oh, yikes. Okay. Yeah. I think what we're seeing right now, and, like, on the one hand, it's very encouraging because they're building her into the main storyline, and they're building, like, you know, like, a mystery around her that needs to be solved and resolved. Mm-hmm. On the other, they're not giving it an, like, adequate time to, like, develop or answer any of these questions. And so, like, all that information about her backstory, like, when are we going to return to it? Are we going to go any deeper? Are we going to get, like, an actual Grace Choi episode instead of these sort of, like, snippets here and there? Like, an episode that explains more about her backstory, what the hell is going on, right? Like, I would love to see Grace Choi get a plot A. And I think if she continues to be a plot B, I don't think we're going to get we're not going to be satisfied. Just given how both, like, how compelling her character is now with both this backstory and this new set of powers that they've introduced us to, and, you know, the potential for her to have, like, a really cool relationship with Anissa, as both of them, like, figuring out who the other person is. Like, I assume that when Grace, as the old man, was fighting Thunder, she didn't realize Thunder was Anissa, which I also don't find believable.
I don't know if she didn't know that it was Anissa, because she should have recognized her voice. She came back later that same day.
It's the same ass day.
Like, jeez, at least when she's knocking on the door outside, she for sure, like, she only heard her undisguised voice. Like, she should have known it was her, right? I mean,
yeah, I know.
And that's probably why she ran, too, and didn't keep trying to fight her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they didn't need to have that fight. I don't fully understand. But I think they only had that fight because Grace didn't recognize who it was. Like, who is this rando?
Yeah, that's true. Maybe she was just trying to, like, scare her away.
Yeah.
I feel like Grace should have just ran right off the bat.
She really should have just ran.
It was her. Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. Anyways, so much still to be resolved on Black Lightning. And I don't know if this means that we're going to get more Grace in season 3. I mean, the makeup sex potentially between Anissa and Grace could be explosive, because then they'll both have their, like, they'll both know each other's real selves. Like, I mean, I'm always thinking about, like, superhero sex and, like, how powers can be woven into it. You know, like, how can we use this? Like, I don't know. I think Grace is, because she's clearly been on the run for a long time, this is a secret that she's kept with her that no one else knows about. And there's also, like, some shame associated with, like, the sort of, like, beast that she is too. She eats raw animals and like cuts out their innards and shit. I mean, she's probably really ashamed of, like, this secret monster that she has to, like, keep caged with medication and, like, by running.
I'm wondering if I'm still just stuck on, like, the medication. How did she figure it out? You know, maybe when she was a kid, she told, you know, her foster parents or somebody about the powers, and then they took her to a shrink, or, like, somehow she got diagnosed with schizophrenia, and then she got given, because the meds are for schizophrenia, right?
Supposedly they're used, but they're probably used for a different purpose with her.
Like, I mean, possibly, but I mean, that's just, like, one possibility that I'm thinking of, is that she was wrongly diagnosed and given that medication, and then so she realized that it stifled the powers. So that just sort of, like, helped her.
Oh, well, okay, in the meantime, one, like, she could discover it.
Then the problem with that is that when she was put in that child prostitution ring, why didn't she use her powers to get out?
She probably didn't know about them, or didn't have, like, I'm wondering if they manifested later for her in life.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if she discovered the thing with the medication, like, that theory only works if she was still with the foster parents when she discovered the powers, and then she was abducted later.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, okay, if they manifested later, then how would she, I don't know, maybe, I don't get it. It's like,
I know. Are we going to get answers? I don't know.
I don't know. It's like, they're so quick to give us questions.
Why are they so slow to give us questions? We want answers.
Yeah. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. So I guess we can shift over into our next set of questions on Charmed.
Yeah, let's talk about our ship.
The first scene that we have of them, Mel is in Jada's bed, and Jada is reading over her shoulder a text message. Already all sorts of boundaries are being crossed, right? And that makes for probably good sex. Like, Mel is trying to get some information out of Jada, and Jada wants information from Mel, but they're kind of, like, both withholding a little bit, right? Mel asks her straight up who the Sarkana broke out of Tartarus, and then Jada's like, oh, I can't tell you that.
Yeah, you know, she says it's not up to her. I mean, being a double agent thing is, like, hot, right? Like, that has to be, like, a hot factor. Is that maintainable, you know? I mean, they said now they're at the toothbrush point. They have the toothbrush conversation, for fuck's sake.
Also, just personal opinion, I actually think it's gross to use someone else's toothbrush.
Same.
And so when she was like, do you have an extra toothbrush I can borrow? And Jada said, you could use mine. I'm like, no.
Yeah. God, no, I mean, it's true.
To add to sort of, like, the spicy factor, there have been a number of cleavage shots. I'm obviously paying a lot more attention to cleavage ever since you said Kristen had been bringing that up. But, like, notice how when Mel gets out of the bed, the camera's just, like, right there. Immediate cleavage shot. I'm like, did they do this for Nico? So I'm wondering if they're just trying to make a direct contrast between Mel's, like, sort of steamy relationship with Jada and her, like, deeper relationship with Nico. I mean, I'm just sort of wondering about that, because now they're at the toothbrush point and Mel has decided she's going to leave a toothbrush there because no way in hell she's going to use yours, Jada. That's gross.
Right.
But then, like, in the very next shot, Maggie is like, so if you're not sleeping with Nico, then why'd you come home with sex hair? And then Maggie touches her sister and finds out that Mel's been sleeping with Jada. I mean, it was a little bit much, but also they're sisters. And so it felt like a very sisterly thing to do, to violate somebody's boundaries.
That was a really cute scene just in general, because Mel was clearly, like, not wanting to tell them. for good reason. This is definitely not good for, like, her mission.
It was really funny because Macy was like, wait, are you doing this as part of the mission?
Oh, Macy.
Maggie says, Mel, you're going to let sex brain cloud your judgment about the Sarkana, which, true, like, sex will cloud your judgment about the Sarkana. But Mel has already decided that the Sarkana are chill, and she's all about that life, right? And we find that out by the end of the episode when she uses that hex on the human.
I'm a little bit worried about Mel, and I feel like I saw this coming, too, where she, like, would very easily believe the Sarkana's side. I just want to be like, proceed with caution. You still don't know the whole story. They're not telling you everything.
As a charmed one, you're not supposed to meddle with human affairs like that. But she's already decided that that's cool. At the end of the episode, when Macy and Maggie saw what Mel was doing, they were just kind of like, what was that? What did you just do? Then the next scene that we have between Mel and Jada, they're back in Jada's bedroom. By the way, Jada lives in some kind of warehouse with, like, fencing on the inside, but it's just the bedroom. Interesting. Have you also noticed, and I'm noticing this because I enjoy femmes, she's changed up her lipstick. She was wearing, like, a light pink color on her lips.
She's been changing up her look a lot.
They're, like, giving her makeup a much lighter look, and I think it's to make her a little bit less of a sex pot because she's clearly catching feelings, right? She invites Mel to help her talk through some family BS and then says, your detective ex called to tell me my parents want to meet up. Like, what?
Yeah.
So Nico is still present even though she's not there. Like, you know, Maggie's like, oh, you're not sleeping with Nico. She's, like, playing a role in the developments between Mel and Jada.
Unfortunately, all off screen in this episode, but still, again, I'm glad that she's like, she's still in the story, you know, she's coming in, she's coming back.
Yeah, she's definitely coming back. And then Jada, like, explains she was adopted, she didn't know she was a witch, she was messed up for a while, did a lot of drugs, acted crazy, and then she ran away, and the Sarkana saved her. Okay.
And her parents specifically don't know that she's a witch, which is good, because that's something that we were wondering. Like, we were wondering, is it actually her parents who were looking for her? And B, whether or not they knew that this was actual witch stuff or if they thought. So now it's like they literally just think it's a cult that's maybe involved in witchcraft, you know, so-called witchcraft.
Clearly, Jada inviting Mel to help her process some family stuff means that she doesn't just see Mel as a hookup. And so that's our first hint. But then she follows up with, so I was wondering, want to meet the parents? What?
So soon. Like,
first of all, you're estranged from your parents, okay? Yeah, they haven't seen you. And then, of course, Mel made the same face that we did, where she's like, what? Like, what does that mean? It's too soon. And then, like, immediately Jada retreats and says, oh, no, never mind. I get it. Forget I asked. And, like, my heart kind of broke for her in that moment because clearly Jada puts on a whole front and pretends to be all, like, hard and, like, badass. But she's also just a softie, and she made herself vulnerable and then kind of regretted it right after.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also was, like, a little bit confused because obviously she didn't mean it in the traditional sense of, like, oh, you know, meet my parents and I will introduce you as my girlfriend. You know what I mean? It was more like, will you help me face my parents?
Yeah.
Which is still a lot to ask of somebody, but I don't know. I was a little bit confused because I felt like she was asking Mel as, like, you know, you're somebody that I trust, you know, somebody who could, like, help me through this. First of all, like, low-key, I'm like, is there no one else in this Arcana? You're literally, like, sisters of the Arcana. Like,
yeah,
you don't have anybody else in that group that can, like, help you with this. Or maybe they would just be against her, like, reaching out to her parents in the first place. The whole thing kind of threw me off.
Jada was definitely awkward in that moment. And I felt for her because she, like, totally let her guard down. It's just clear that Jada's more into Mel than maybe Mel is into Jada.
Yeah, Mel definitely has her reservations, especially since Nico came back into the picture.
I know. And Jada's just like, no, I want to be more than fuck buddies. Like,
yeah. You know?
That was a little bit confusing. And I'm confused about what I'm shipping and, like, do I want them to break my heart like this? Do I want Jada to be left out in the cold? I don't know.
Well, and there's still the question of, you know, like, the Sarkana versus Elders and, like, Mel's place in the whole thing. Like, what if, you know, regardless of their romantic desires, what if Mel discovers that Jada and or the Sarkana are doing something that she's not for? And so she's just like, oh, like, this is bad. You're bad.
Yeah. You know? She's flirting with danger.
Literally.
Yeah, literally. Yes, literally. I think it is cool that we're getting some of Jada's backstory. It's nice to see them give her a little more development.
I felt like they had pretty short scenes, like not a lot of screen time for the ship mm-hmm. in general this episode. But that last scene left us on the kind of cliffhanger that lets you know the yeah. next episode mm-hmm. is about to yeah. be all about it.
So at the very end of the episode, after all the manic pixie dream girl stuff had been resolved, Mel and Jada are walking, and Mel apologizes for freaking out earlier because she's at this point agreed to meet the parents mm-hmm. with her. And then like she comforts her and like says like everything's gonna be fine, they're your parents, blah blah blah. And then they like hold hands, and like also just like looking at Jada's hands, that was like lesbian hands because mm-hmm. of the tattoos and then also the rings. But anyways, so they like hold hands, have a little moment, and then like an unmarked van comes screeching out, and people with fucking crossbows shoot at them, and one of them shoots Jada.
Yep. So I'm not saying this is Mel's fault, but why didn't she freeze time? What are you doing? She had ample opportunity when they like slid open the door, when the people came out with the masks and crossbows before they were even primed to shoot. She just kind of froze, and I was like, damn, Mel, like you're the one with the perfect power for this.
I mean, she was clearly taken by surprise, mm-hmm. and maybe that's the cliffhanger, so at the start of next week's episode, she'll have frozen time, taken Jada to safety, and tried to figure out what the hell was going on.
Yeah, hopefully.
But yeah, so like Jada's been shot, but it doesn't look like a critical blow. It kind of looked like it went to her upper shoulder. And so my immediate question was like, did Nico send these people? Like, because Nico was the one who called and said that Jada's parents wanted to meet with her. Who is Nico working for? And who are those people? And why the crossbows, you know? Why the crossbows? That's a weird weapon. Why?
It made me think that it was tipped with something, like a poison or something, maybe to like suppress her powers if they actually knew that she was a witch.
God, that wouldn't be so devious of Nico, though.
But like, what if Nico doesn't? I'm still like, what if Nico doesn't know? And what if Nico's just a different person in this, you know?
Oh my God, don't talk like that.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
There's endless possibilities, endless questions. Like we said, even more questions than last time. Our episode was titled So Many Questions.
Jeez, I don't even know how do we follow up to like way more questions than even last time, because that's how we feel right now.
Yeah.
I mean, the good news is that next week's episode is definitely going to be Mel Jada heavy.
Right, right.
Dealing with this cliffhanger.
Which we can't say the same about Black Lightning necessarily, because I feel like sometimes they'll leave us on cliffhangers. Yeah. So we think about Grace, mm-hmm. and then they'll go like two or three episodes without, you know, with nary a mention.
Nary a mention. I love the way you talk, Amira. I really do. Yeah. Because we've been getting a little bit of like B plot, C plot, just like sprinkled in there in every mm-hmm. single episode with Mel. And so next week's is going to be like the A plot, Mel, Jada.
Right, right.
Going on. I watched the preview for next week's episodes and they're not there.
Yeah, that's true. What if it's literally, like you said, Mel froze time and brought her to safety, and it's just, they just kind of go over it exposition with just like an offhand line, like, oh yeah, how is Jada doing? Oh, she's still recovering. You know, we just still don't know who came out of the van. And then it's just put off for another couple of episodes while they quote unquote research or to try to figure it out.
Any content about that would have given away the cliffhanger. So that's why they left it out of the preview. Sometimes shows will do that. I've been misled before by the CW.
Okay. So I'm going to choose to believe you and have hope this time around. And I will not blame you.
Okay, thank you.
If it ends up not being true. So I just wanted to point out one thing that is an inconsistency with the original series. So as soon as the pixie tricked Harry into stealing the Book of Shadows and like zapping out of there, Kristen nearly leapt out of her seat and was like, you can't do that! Because apparently in the original series, only the charmed ones could remove the book from the house. If someone else tried to, the book would be sucked back in. Even the white lighter. So,
Wow.
So they, I guess, just threw that rule out the window. I don't know what really how essential that was, but I feel like that kind of matters in the new series, that like anyone can take it, or maybe they just changed it so that Harry specifically can take it, but no one else can. I don't really know. I don't know what it is, but
that's like legit good rule though. Like, Why would you ever want to? Because they were, that book is everything. All their information, all their spells. So anyway, that's a good rule. I'm glad that the original series had it because it protects the girls. But like, what?
Yeah. So anyway, I felt like this episode dealt with some good topics. I know it was like supposed to be like controversial how Mel dealt with that guy with the hex at the end, but I was kind of like into it, honestly.
I think we all were, though. Like, I actually thought this was a very strong episode overall, because what I thought was a sort of whimsical storyline, we find out at the end. And I have to say that the casting department for the show did a great job finding whoever played that pixie. Chloe, because
she did her good job.
Her closing scene, that monologue where she says that, like, she was living, I was living my best life. And then I was the unlucky pixie who walked into his Pictionary trap. And he was convinced that they'd only pick one white guy. I think it's really hard being a white guy these days.
That
was hilarious. and then she says, I didn't want to do all those bad things, but I couldn't say no. And it felt like also a very sort of Me Too consent type of storyline where it's not like the sort of physical violation, but the loss of agency, having someone take that from you. It kind of reminds me of like
Jessica Jones.
I never watched that show because it looked terrifying.
good choice.
But if I remember correctly, the major villain in the early season of Jessica Jones also has control of her powers. Is that right? Yeah. Mind control. Yes. Similar themes of like exploitation and abuse at the hands of a man who can control you for what you're doing. So that was really fucked up. And it added some gravitas to what was otherwise a very light and kind of whimsical, funny, silly episode, right?
Oh, I know. Yeah. I mean, when she broke at the end, I like really felt that. I mean, it was like not very subtle metaphor, obviously, but it was just a very well done metaphor, you know, about like people who, you know, like you said, lose their agency or are like brainwashed or manipulated psychologically. And then, you know, when they're kind of like out of it, it's like they feel terrible. And I feel like the sisters did a really good job of, you know, making her feel better and reassuring her that it wasn't her fault.
Team up. That was really cute.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I like the girls this episode. And, you know, Macy decides to sleep with
Galvin. Yeah. I know.
I don't know.
All he had to say was, I love you. And the gates were open.
I mean, listen, she should do whatever she wants to do. I support her. It's fine.
He is definitely a good person. And I think, I mean, he's willing to put his life at risk, literally, to help save her, you know, get rid of her demon side. And I had no problem with that progression in the relationship. My only caveat, and I've mentioned this before, is that while I was happy that they brought up the issue of, like, you know, not losing your virginity at a young age and, like, you know, having that, how that's difficult because it's like very normalized in society and blah, blah, blah. I still didn't like that it was presented as like a problem that needed solving. And like, it still was sort of putting pressure on that issue. And it needed like a resolution, which was her losing her virginity. So.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're totally right about that. I mean, I kind of wish that they had dealt with it a little bit differently and like maybe had an episode about her anxiety about it. It's like what we got in One Day at a Time, where we got an episode about, you know, Elena's anxiety about having sex for the first time.
Right.
I would have liked an episode kind of like that, because it would give more visibility to people who do not have sexual experience for whatever reason and like are going through that. And I felt like that might have been a missed opportunity. Like, she's not even that old. She's still in her late 20s, right?
Right. Yeah. But it's still like, you know, the episode of One Day at a Time is nice and relatable for teens, but not for people who are in their late 20s.
Yeah.
Who are in the same situation.
What I would have liked is that if they'd had like a separate episode where Macy was thinking about it, and like I would have liked an almost comical episode where they go through the motions and like she's totally awkward and doesn't know what she's doing. Like, I would have liked something like that instead of like sex being this prize that Galvin got to win at the end.
Yeah.
Boyfriend, you know?
Yeah.
A good boyfriend, if you keep waiting, maybe she'll put out. But I'm also okay with giving less screen time to the straight couples, just period. I just wish we got less of Potato and Maggie instead of Macy and Galvin.
True. Look, at the end of the day, we're never going to be satisfied. So, yeah.
With Mel and Jada, we're not completely sure how we feel yet about them as a couple.
True. Yeah. I mean, I'm happy that there's, you know, a queer woman of color ship that's getting screen time. There's a queer woman of color love triangle brewing. And that's more than we could have ever hoped for, I think, you know, from from this show in particular. I mean, we knew that one of the sisters was going to be queer. I did not realize that they were going to give us this much. But, you know, the straight sisters still get a lot of screen time. Maggie, for some godforsaken reason, is very attracted to Parker.
Like, we don't care about the potato.
We don't. I know. I feel like they think, oh, you know, we're going to, like, we know we have to work hard to get, like, the audience to forgive him. And I'm like, you don't have to work hard, actually. You just shouldn't be working on it at all. Yeah. It's like, yes. I just work on someone else.
I almost vomited when I saw Potato and Maggie and that little golden retriever at the very end. What is this? This feels like some kind of, like one of those rom-com infomercials. Like a pharmaceutical infomercial where they're like, no, take this for your cholesterol. Like, and then you see a happy couple with a little dog.
Right.
I was just so annoyed. So supremely annoyed.
Same. I couldn't even watch. I had to look away. I was like, just disgusted.
The golden retriever thing just was sickening. Don't put it in our faces. Jeez. We don't need to see that.
For real. It was a cute episode. I was happy with it. It did have those, like, Me Too vibes, like last week's Brooklyn Nine-Nine. A quick plug, if you haven't seen it, you should definitely watch it. Very, very well-written and powerful episode directed by our favorite Latina bisexual, Stephanie Beatriz.
Woo!
Yeah, she did an excellent job. So
it was great. I'm enjoying this season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine as a whole. Yeah, so we are real excited about next week's Charmed episode. Charmed actually gives answers. So I'm, like, excited for whatever answers we're going to get in next week's episode with respect to Jada's backstory and Nico's potential involvement in the Crossbow team. What's going on there? The next episode is going to be Jada heavy. They can't introduce something big like that and then not give us the full plot A treatment.
I hope. Again, I mean, I can see how they could, like, write it off as, like, plot B or even non-existent for one episode. But
oh, my God, no.
I know. Like I said, I'm choosing to be hopeful and just think that they're not including it in the promos for the next episode because it would give too much away.
You're also taking the healthy and safer approach, which is to keep your expectations as low as possible.
I know. I'm just so pessimistic.
No, but it's like, it's way better than doing the opposite because I'm just, like, routinely disappointed. I'm like, no!
Yeah.
No?
Yeah. I know. I feel like it's a very, like, depressing outlook.
I've left extremely high hopes. You don't have very much of that. And then, like, combined, we can get somewhere close to what we get in the real world. This is, like, medium level of content, shipper content between Black Lightning and Charmed. We're hoping that that goes from medium to, like, big. You know what we should do? We should have, like, some kind of, like, a rating system just for the level or extent of coverage and representation on a show. I mean, we have A, B, and C plot.
Yeah, and also, like the quality. You know what I mean? Like, there's, like, screen time. Like, so quantity versus quality of, like, the time that we're given. Because sometimes we don't get a lot of screen time, but the stuff that we get is really juicy.
Yes.
And sometimes it's the opposite, so.
And also whether or not the actresses are actually in the scene. That should be part of the metric in terms of quality. Because I'm like, where's Grace Choi, you know? Give us Chantel Tui, give us Nico, like, Ellen Tamaki actually in the scene instead of her having to play this role. I think it's a labor issue. I think the showrunners just don't want to pay people. But
yeah, it's just budgeting. It's budgeting. You know?
I think it's a budget issue. Yeah. So anyways, thanks for joining us this week as we recap Black Lightning and Charmed. We're going to try to keep this up. We've got, I guess, 2 more weeks of Black Lightning and Charmed back to back.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter @QWOCship. And that's it.
Well, thanks. Bye.
Bye.